What are some of the biggest advancements and breakthroughs, or like soon to be advancements and breakthroughs that are currently happening right now in longevity?
Of course, you never know what's going to happen. If we knew what we were doing, it wouldn't be called research. That's one of my favorite answers. But in terms of breakthroughs that have happened recently, yeah, it's very exciting. And I say I focus on mice, not just because mice are mammals and people relate to them more than they relate to flies, for example, but also because they live relatively short lives, 2.5 years or so, and therefore we have the ability to actually determine whether they live reasonably quickly, whether something makes them live longer. This is something that I feel is very important in longevity research. A lot of my colleagues try to get away from it. They try to say, oh, let's measure health span. Let's not worry about lifespan. And that's all very well, except that when the wider world looks at what you've done and you've measured that in some way or other, your mice or your dogs or whatever are healthier at a given chronological age than they otherwise would have been, people will say, yeah, that's all very well, but you haven't fixed aging, have you? And they'll say, what do you mean? And they'll say, you haven't made them live longer. And you say, I might have done. And they say, yeah, you might not have done. And I'm going to believe that you didn't. So you've got to measure lifespan. And so that's why we work in mice. So what are the advantages? The extraordinary thing is that even though we always have to keep in mind what I said earlier, that it's a divide and conquer problem, and you've got to do a lot of things at the same time to the same animal, nevertheless, there are a number of things, an accelerating number of things, that you can do just one thing, just individually to mice, and they'll make them live a bit longer, which is completely extraordinary, really. It means that if you like, the knock-on effect of fixing one thing spread out and permeate the entire metabolism of the animal. That's why I was able, 3 years ago or so, to design an experiment putting four things together, all in the same mice at the same time, with the goal to see whether we could get additivity, getting more life extension when we put them together than what we did if we did any one of them individually. And it worked pretty well. We definitely got additivity. We didn't get the magnitude of the effect that we were hoping to get. And I believe that's fundamentally because we only used four interventions. So the next experiment I want to do will involve eight. But the point is, I couldn't have done an eight intervention experiment 3 years ago because there just were not that many things that had already been shown to extend lifespan, especially if you start late in life. This is a critical thing. We start our experiments when the mice are already in middle age. And I feel if you don't do that, then again, people don't really relate to what you're doing. They think, oh, I've missed the boat. So yes, middle age. And now, yeah, in the past couple of years, while our first experiment was ongoing, paper after paper has come out showing this or that new thing works. So now we're spot for choice. I could do two different eight intervention experiments in parallel starting today if I had the money, which I don't. They cost about $6 million each, these experiments. The first one, because it was only half the size, cost $3.5 million. We've identified a few cost savings, so we're cutting it down a bit. But still, yeah, a lot of money. But then again, when I say it's a lot of money, think about it. It's a lot of money for by the standards of typical mouse experiments, but it's a really insignificant amount of money compared to clinical trials.
And what are some of these interventions that you're doing, and how do they work in extending the lifespan of these organisms?
So I can't really answer the second question very well. And the reason I can't is precisely because of this knock-on effect thing. You honestly. This is a big surprise. This started, there were hints of it maybe 15 years ago when people first started implementing some of the more aggressive damage repair approaches in mice. Now, back then, the experiments that were done were very artificial. One had to create clever genetic models in order to do the experiment. But it became clear that one particular type of damage repair, the removal of senescent cells, had far bigger knock-on effects than anyone would have guessed. And the story has continued, as I say. But what I can certainly do, of course, is tell you what the interventions are. So in our first experiment, we actually, I said we did four, we really only did three, because the fourth one that we put in was not a damage repair approach. It was a drug called rapamycin, which is known to be what's called a calorie restriction mimetic. In other words, it essentially tricks the mice into thinking they're not getting enough food, even though they actually are. And the reason that's beneficial is for the same reason that it's beneficial if you actually genuinely give the mice less food than they would like. Nature has evolved a response to that, because of course it happens in nature, famines happen, right? It turns out that it's better for the organism, better for the for evolution, if the if you have a response, if you basically readjust your metabolic priorities in favor of hunkering down, so to speak, and surviving the famine, rather than throwing your resources into growth and reproduction. Reason that makes sense, of course, is that if you have offspring during a famine, the offspring die of starvation before they can have their own offspring, so you've wasted your energy from an evolutionary point of view. All right, rapamycin does it quite well, definitely reproducibly extends life. So we did this as a kind of positive control. But then in addition, we had these three other interventions which were very much damage repair. So one of them was what's called heterochronic bone marrow transplant. So we killed a lot of young mice and scraped up their bone marrow and purified out the stem cells from it, and then injected those stem cells into old mice in a manner that allowed some of those stem cells to survive long-term. And beneficial. Then another thing we did was telomerase gene therapy. So we gave a viral vector that had been engineered to express this enzyme telomerase. But again, it's been found to extend life in other people's hands, a couple of studies. So that's good. And then the third one was a senolytic, something that gets rid of senescent cells that I mentioned a moment ago.
Incredible that you're already seeing progress and signs that it is extending the life. You mentioned senescent cells. Are these kind of the same as them, like zombie cells?
Yeah.
Could you explain what they are?
Yeah, zombie cells, that's a kind of colloquial term, but it means the same thing. Yeah, so basically what happens in the body is that occasionally cells get into a kind of altered state, a kind of aberrant state, where they are doing different things from what they were built to do. Maybe they're also doing the original things, but they are, in particular, they are not dividing, but they are secreting certain substances. Now, it's believed that this response evolved for a few reasons. It seems to be beneficial in wound healing, but the thing is that, of course, wound healing doesn't take very long. So the idea is senescent cells, when they arise, they ought to go away again after. Sometimes senescent cells can arise when a cell detects that it has suffered DNA damage. And in that case, it responds by going into this frozen state where it is unable to divide. And that is believed to be a defense against becoming a cancer cell. But because of this secretion thing I mentioned, there are reasons why senescent cells are bad. So we have mechanisms in the body, especially around the immune system, to get rid of these cells. But those systems don't work 100%. So some senescent cells survive long-term, and the overall load of senescent cells in the body gradually rises over time. And yeah, this is generally believed to be rather bad for you because of the stuff that is secreted. In fact, there's all manner of ways in which it's been shown to be bad for you. Basically, if you can get rid of these cells, if you can augment the machinery that the body already has for getting rid of them, then that's going to be beneficial.